Blessed to be with you here, Kevin Miller in the Morning, joined by Dave Pezzo, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial, man at Pezzo Travel, maybe? Maybe you'd start your own travel business?
I don't think so.
Traveling with Pezzo?
No travel. We did. We used to do those cruises.
Really?
We did 11 of them.
Really? Was it you, John, and Chris? Is that right?
Nope. Just
the Pezzo Center.
Pezzo's, yeah.
Without John and Chris?
Yes. Yeah.
My goodness gracious.
Yeah, just
went out. What was that like?
Oh, it was just super fun. It was. I mean, I really thought they were great. And it was a chance for my kids also. I had young kids at the time.
Sure.
They all got to see a good part of the world, right?
Your kids before they had kids.
Correct. Right. That's right. Exactly. Before the grandkids. Exactly. So, yes. But it was great. And we had people would come, you know, who 8 times in a row, you know, until
sure.
they got too old to travel, stuff like that. It was just great fun.
Now, see, for me, that would be like constantly working because people would want your time and, okay, hey, we're going to the sun deck. And
yeah.
you're not sitting there enjoying the sun deck by yourself. You got, look, people that you adore and love. But after a while, you know, you go on a cruise to get away from everything.
No, it's a very fair point. You are doing a good bit of work. But, you know, people are very, very nice, and they do get that. And they obviously, when you're with your family, give you some space. But you're quite right. It was the people you're with, you really do enjoy them. And so it's fun. It makes it more fun.
I've got a couple hardball questions for you this morning.
Ooh, okay. From cruising to hardball.
Yes, all right. Exactly. It's an eclectic mix here on 107.5 FM 580. And by the way, you can catch Dave on Facebook, Twitter, and every Saturday right here, 8 to 10, Money Matters. You know, the legislature just approved Medicaid expansion, the funding of it. They don't know how much it's going to be. They don't know how many people are going to be eligible. We really don't know if it's ever going to stay 90-10 with the federal government,
right?
With the funding mechanism. Because remember, this is Dave Pezzo's favorite word. It's free money, everybody.
Right.
The television and the radio ad said, look, you're going to get free money from Washington. Idaho deserves the free money, so let's vote for free money. So your thoughts initially on the funding of Medicaid expansion as a business owner, as an employer, as a member of our community, how will it impact our economy?
In the long run, it's going to be very negative. There's no question in my mind. It's always the idea whenever you get in bed with the government, federal government, what have you, it doesn't end well. And what I mean by that is, of course, then they can always take it away, and I think they will. They'll start pushing more funding to the states, or maybe they don't do it that way. Maybe they just have more restrictions, if you will. And then states will have to vote through what they want to cover, which means they're going to cover more. That's what's going to happen in Idaho. You just don't – there's no such thing as magic free money. There
yeah.
just isn't.
However, you should there – and this has been – I had a chance to work over the weekend, which is I had a cup of coffee with someone and – actually a few people, and they were saying this is what's really going on in the legislature. Should there be a cap on what we are going to spend for Medicaid expansion?
Hmm.
People have said, you know, it started out as 60,000 folks that are eligible. And look, we're not vilifying the people that need the help, but now it's grown to 80,000. Perhaps there's no limit. It's like a mini Obamacare.
Right.
So should there be a cap on spending?
Yeah, there should be. There should be a cap on the numbers, and I'm sorry that some people are going to fall through the cracks. That's inevitable. We either decide we're just going to have free medical care, which is not free, of course, and how we're going to pay for it, or we don't. And I don't know why we're running this direction. I just really don't get it. We are getting closer and closer to single pay the way the Democrats want. So it's all this is we voted for getting to be closer to that. And we have not seen any successes around the world. I know people get all excited about the Canadian plan, but that's why the border is lined with clinics, because people can't get any real care. You're not allowed to go get new knees and hips and things like that. Even heart conditions, once you get past a certain age, they don't treat. So that's why they have clinics all along the border. So they're really great at free whatever, you know, physicals and things like that. This is a problem all over the world, and yet we're running headlong into a single-payer plan run by the government, decides who gets what, who's rationing what, how often you can have certain care, instead of individuals with their doctor. I don't know, understand it. And, Kevin, I'm very, very concerned about it here in Idaho. If that's the case in Idaho, imagine what it's like in California.
Well, not only that, but when we're talking about this on KIDO Talk Radio, you have now clinics in Mexico and Tijuana – that if you want to perform something, it costs you $20,000 here. people will go there and pay out of pocket because it's $5,000.
Right. And these are, you know, again, I look, I'm not going to be the guy going down to Mexico for some weird treatments, okay? But
we now, why would you think they were weird?
Well, in some cases they are, and they're certainly not authorized. I mean, I don't want to treat cancer with urine tests or whatever it is, things like that. I think that there's a lot of strange things that go on, and I understand that. If people are on their last leg, they're willing to try anything. They're willing to try anything. But that's but what I'm saying is we don't have the kind of rules and regulations down there, so that won't be me. But in the very long run, the idea of cruise ships parked off of different places around the world that you can hop on with fully staffed, accredited medical folks, I think these are wonderful ideas that are moving forward on a global basis. And I do think that that's going to continue to grow. It's just a business that is flourishing, whether it's over in places like Thailand. It really is flourishing, and these are real deal doctors trained in all kinds of surgeries here in the States, and people can go over there and get them done for a fraction of the cost. Again, they're working on some accrediting and things like that globally, and as they get better and better at it, these to me are the market solutions that we need.
Our great friend Dave Petzl with us. So as we take a look at the legislature, and they still haven't figured out if there's going to be a cap, if they're going to vote on it, I believe that it should be. What about a spending cap for state government? You know, that's been tried at the local level east of the Great River, where you have this hard figure.
Yeah.
So you would think it would be make it more difficult to all of a sudden, at the end of the year, be $60 million in the hole.
You would. You would wish that you could do that. Kevin, I think practically it's awful hard to put a fixed number. You can always say that the budget can't be exceeded. But that's why we also have rainy day funds, is because that you just don't know what's going to happen in your state year to year. It's going to be a great year, so revenues are high. It could be a middle of a recession, revenues are low. And then on top of that, you are going to have natural disasters from time to time. They're going to be costly, maybe economically costly. Again, tax revenues go down, or it could be economically as well as you need to kick up some money. So I think we, again, practically putting a hard number on it, it doesn't work in the real world.
Dave Petzl joining us, Kevin Miller in the morning here, KIDO Talk Radio. But back to this Medicaid expansion, you know, this is a huge issue that could just blow up. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Now, recently, again, I was doing some research. Actually, I was the co-host of the Inspire Excellence podcast with our friend Tommy Elquist. You know who
yes.
Tommy Elquist is? Tommy?
I've heard of him.
Tommy, yes. And we were talking to a young man that was talking about the infrastructure investment in the state of Utah.
Yeah.
And they invested $2 billion, I believe, in infrastructure. I think I have this right. Comparatively, we were like around $200 million mm-hmm. in infrastructure. And when I came back at him with, well, look, they've got bigger population there, blah, blah, blah. He said, look, it's just simply the cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't have the endless resources that, let's say, a bigger state like Utah does. Maybe mm-hmm. one day we will. But the idea of investing in infrastructure, and what would that really look like? We say, look, we're tired of the traffic on the connector. I'm stuck in the connector right now. I'm stuck once again. 3 or 4 years ago, it was smooth sailing. We used to laugh about the traffic situation.
Yes.
But coming in now, or you know, coming in from the hinterlands, as Dave Petzl likes to call it, I call it home, from Canyon County or further out in Ada County. It takes you know, sometimes an hour to get in and get home. It's
it
like
does.
A mini Denver.
It is, and becoming worse. I actually was over in the Eagle area this weekend. I know. No, but I'm just saying it was on a Saturday. Oh, wow. Jab me with a stick. I'm telling you, that is a waiting through lights on U-Stick for two lights and stuff like that. It's a difficult thing. And so I can't imagine every day you must have to get used to it, but it was a difficult thing for us to drive all the way over there. It really is. And so I know it's a traffic problem, and that's the way it is when you have a growing, booming population. But you did. It exactly reminded me of Denver and all the suburbs around there and how hard it is to get in and out.
Sure, but you take a look at it from a business perspective. The developers are going to say, look, we get hit over the coals with impact fees. NAMPA looking at raising its impact
yep.
fees.
Yep.
Meridian already on the shelf for that. And, you know, how do you fix this thing? And then you have states that say, look, we're going to make sure that we keep ours, like Utah. They're very shrewd, looking at us and saying, well, Idaho's further back. We don't have to worry about them, but we're going to keep our competitive advantage by investing big money.
Yeah. And I don't there's no question that if you're looking at trying to put some kind of new infrastructure in, that you're going to need to have the public / government assistance. But anytime you do this on a large scale basis, you're going to have a whole lot of cronyism. You're going to have corporate welfare, and you're going to have cost overruns that will just blow your mind. It doesn't matter if you're doing another big dig like Seattle did that went months and billions of dollars
sure.
over. We're going to do the same thing here. It's not, well, we do it good, or Utah does it so good that the $2 billion we have, they're going to be like really great with that $2 billion. Nope, they're going to toss it away just like everybody else. Government can't do it right. They never do, and yet we still have to do certain things with government because there's no way we can do it individually. What's the point of you trying to do it individually? Like every person's responsible for their mile of road. It needs to be a collective.
Well, you talk to some libs, and they want to charge you for the miles that you've used your car encourage you to be like Dave Petso and live in the city.
Hey, if you have an electric car, it's the only way I know how to do it, right?
Now you're sounding like former Governor Otter. Coming up next, a new bill could force the public to vote on such projects as the Boise Library and the stadium. We'll get Dave Petso's take on that. If you have a question about your money, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You're listening to Dave Petso, Kevin Miller, 107.5 FM, 580 AM, KIDO Talk Radio. All right, we continue on now under management supervision. Dave Petso with Kevin Miller.
Terrifying.
Jeff the suit here watching.
I know, it's terrifying.
Making sure that your segment is up to snuff.
Feel my blood pressure
now
up.
You know what I deal with all the time.
Sweating.
Indeed. Let's talk a little bit about this new bill proposed by House Majority Leader Mike Moyle that would require a public vote on, you know, urban renewal. So the Boise Stadium, in other words, if it's financed with urban renewal money, the public would vote on it. Currently, it's up to your friend Dave Beter and his crew. I won't say cronies because Mr. Jeff the Suit is here. But the idea of really rewiring how we fund urban renewal projects.
God, it's a good question, Kevin, because there's two things. We're a representative government. You can't just every time you want to do something, you have a vote. I mean, that just seems absurd. So is that maybe a slippery slope we're running down? But the idea that the mayor is going to continue to try to have Main Street to run down to two lanes and no parking for a bike lane, that we're going to go ahead and figure out a way to put up a stadium, even though people don't want it, even though the funding's not there, it doesn't appear to be. These are things that I'm not sure how to set that where you have maybe a size of project or an impact of project that would require people to step forward. But again, as a form of representative government, we can't just sit around and vote on everything. That's absurd.
So are you with Mike Moyle or are you with Dave Beter?
I'm with Mike Moyle, but I got to go with having some restrictions on this. We can't be voting for everything. I think it's a difficult question.
I understand you live in Boise, so you've got to be careful. You lived in the land of the free.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right. You lived in the hinterlands.
Where are you now?
Where? What do you mean? Where do I live?
No, right now, at this moment.
In Boise.
Exactly. You be careful. We shoot aliens here.
Is that the voice of experience? anyway, moving on. JCPenney just announced it will close 24 more stores this year.
Mm-hmm. 24.
Is this progress?
I'm going to suggest it's 24 times 10 or 20 or 50. JCPenney's has been gone. It is in real trouble, really big trouble. I don't think they're going to close only 24 stores.
But not worse than Sears.
Yeah, I think they're going the way of Sears.
So on one hand, we have these iconic institutions.
Yeah.
Long before Jeff the Suit was born, called Montgomery Ward. Mm-hmm. We have Sears. We have JCPenney's that are floundering. And yet you have Home Depot. You have Lowe's. Relatively new experiences doing well.
And that's the way of retail. Always has been. Retail is one of the toughest things in the whole world to do and to do well. And companies that make it in the long run, they all go out. I mean, Sears was amazing to have lasted 100 years. Nobody else does. And you have to constantly reinvent until you screw up. The level of capital need is so intense. They're borrowing money. Any mistake is magnified. It's a really tough business. And again, I can't believe when I go to the store, and I don't go very often, thank goodness. But when you go, I can't believe that we can get, you know, a shirt for $20 or $30. It's astounding. How do they pay for the buildings? How do they pay for all the shipping, making the shirt, all that stuff? And so when you get these shirts and they have to sell them for half that price because it's not in style or what have you, or they just get thrown away, it's huge losses to overcome. So it's deadly dangerous at every turn.
But aren't we losing a sense of community there?
Well, we are. Yeah, we do. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, technology is wonderful. Technology is scary. But to sit around here and worry about the people that made buggy whips, I enjoy the automobile. It's just that's kind of the way of the world, and it is unfortunate.
Unless you were making the buggy whips, yes.
Exactly. And when you are, then it's personal and it's tough, and I don't like that either. It's just, you know, but someday I might be replaced by an artificial intelligence, financial advisor.
Well, the government will save you from that. You're a big fan of the government.
At that point, I would be. Yeah. Bail me out.
And moving right along, Dave Pezzo joining us, host of Money Matters, Saturdays 8 to 10 on KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM, 580 AM. Are you familiar with a company called Amazon?
I think I've heard of them, yeah.
So Amazon had this big deal in New York, and then all of a sudden you had the devious little liberals decide that Amazon was not a safe place, unfair working conditions. They didn't want Amazon there unless Amazon was going to pay a lot of money. Amazon walked away, and now I believe they're going to Virginia, home of the, I believe, second largest Micron institution, second only to what they've built in Taiwan.
Virginia and Nashville both. Okay. They're expanding there. Yeah.
So when government offers incentives, now are you a fan of incentives?
It depends. It really does. I think you need to have incentives when you're competing in a world of getting big.
Wait a minute. You're a big money conservative guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No
Isn't
question
that
about
socialism?
It. It's also part of playing the game. Yeah. That is not socialism.
Okay.
It is not. And when you have – you are competing against other places, other states to gather business here, we better have something to give them. Idaho mostly gives, if you will, an easy way, easy path forward with allowing – what am I trying to say here? Factories to go up within a year or two,
sure,
instead of 10 years of permitting and things like that that other states have. So in other words, the regulatory environment is much better here. And that's one of the reasons that Chobani located here. It wasn't because they gave them $1 billion.
Right.
But we have to compete somewhere.
Right. The tax incentives. And it is a big game. And you're competing against other states, most notably the state of Utah. So back to Amazon. We've got a few stories coming out about the proposed Amazon place in Nampa. We hear now that Nampa may get up to 3,000 jobs being an Amazon fulfillment center. Of course, the mayor of Meridian is not mad. She doesn't get mad, but she says, look, Nampa gets Amazon, we get a bunch more traffic.
Right.
Is it worth it?
Of course it's worth it. You've got to continue to create jobs. And I get what she's saying. But at the same time, just because they decided to locate 20 miles to the left or the right doesn't mean you're not going to pick up economic development from them. You're not going to get the direct hit from taxes of a big building that sits there. But you're certainly going to get good economic activity right where you are.
Continuing on, now you've got a complaint filed to OSHA concerning workplace conditions. This has been a problem with Amazon for quite some time, how they treat their workers.
Liberals eat their own. They tend to. Seriously, you're talking about one of the most liberal companies in the world is Amazon, and they don't pay well. On top of that, you've got the libs hating them in New York. It's a very weird dynamic. You talk a lot to a lot of the conservatives and how the Republican Party split and things like that. I think it's much more unified. I really do. And I just think that people are different, and this is an interesting thing that they are literally out there fighting to keep costs super low, and yet at the same time telling people that we have to increase minimum wage all over the place.
Well,
so it doesn't make sense to me.
If you make it too expensive, they'll replace you with a robot.
And they already are. These places are – there's no way they can handle all of the packages that they're running through these places. I'm sure you've seen them on specials and seen what these fulfillment centers do. It's all automated. It's amazing. There's hardly any human beings compared to how many packages go through there.
Dave Pezzo joining us. Kevin Miller in the morning here, KIDO Talk Radio. Finally, we're getting ready for the big housing season.
Mm-hmm.
Snow looks to be over. Let's hope. So do you think that we'll exceed the median home prices that we had in Ada County, a record even going back to rivaling 2007?
Absolutely, we will. People are still moving here. And so they will. We will continue to go up. But we have seen it slow down. I have a house next to me that's been vacant for a year. You know, and yes, there are certain issues with it. But at the same time, it's not so hot you can't find anything. And as I was out in the hinterlands over the weekend,
Eagle.
But that's the hinterlands.
Eagle,
it
Idaho.
It was out way past there, almost clear out to Star, which is way, way out there. And so at any rate, you're just seeing subdivisions popping in everywhere, Kevin. And so they are meeting the demand. And I think that but as far as thinking housing will not continue to increase in price, I think that's ridiculous.
A record year coming up for home prices.
Absolutely. No question.
Finally, back to our subject that we started with, transportation. We're building a lot of subdivisions.
Yep.
And everybody's making a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are the roads? You know, where is ACHD? Where is Ada County? Where is even the state government on this?
Well,
look, I mean, you're looking at these cul-de-sacs and these neighborhoods, and you're getting, you know, lots of cars going through, whether it's Paramount and Meridian or in Eagle or in Boise.
I know. We're behind. We're behind the curve. Everywhere is behind the curve. Whenever you have growth, you're always going to be behind the curve because you need new roads, you need new bridges, you need new everywhere, everything. And you're going out to new subdivisions in one direction, and that takes all of the resources for 1 year. You're trying to play catch-up in the older places. It is just constant catch-up and constant complaint, and they never will solve that problem.
Here I was going to ask you for a solution.
I don't think we should shut it down for a while. That would, other than the financial problem.
You talk about home prices, what are you going to pay for it? Home prices going through the roofs.
It would
shut down growth.
What happens in the big cities all the time, and they really don't. They don't want growth, not next to me.
Right.
Once you've arrived and you have money, you don't want new people showing up. They might think different than you.
Dave Pezzo, catch him Saturday, 8 to 10, right here. Money Matters Anytime, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Kevin.
You're listening to KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM, 580 AM.
It's grandbaby time, right? I got to go see my grandkids. And so I'm up here in Seattle enjoying the grandkids and the horrible weather because Seattle is just, like, horrible. But can't wait to get home for that. And I wish I could drag these fine kiddos back with me. But that's the way it goes. They are up here, and so am I. Periodically. So thank you. I do appreciate your phone calls, though, at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Also, if you prefer email, that's just fine. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. Interesting. Now, we have 5 days in a row after like almost every day since the beginning of the year is up, and we're down 5 days, and the doom and gloom is almost palpable, right? It is. It's the way media is. And don't worry, I'm not going to just talk about media today. We all know. But it is important to remind ourselves, even if it is just for a moment, of how bad the media is. And it's not just, bad media. It's what we do. If we didn't click on and watch the most horrifying report all the time, if we didn't click on and figure out who was sleeping with who and who divorced who and who shot who and who killed who and what person, I can't remember what movie they were in, but you know, that person, that famous person, what horrible thing they did. We just follow other people's lives. We follow the doom and gloom just constantly. Or we wouldn't be having so many outlets reporting it. It sells advertising, apparently. It really is important for us to understand. And as we have mixed data, which we have such an incredibly mixed data this week. But think about this. Market has gone, you know, went straight down the fourth quarter, right? And went straight up for like 4 or 5 weeks in the new year, right? Or 8 to 10 weeks, just straight up. Not even a pause. You know, a remarkable recovery. Markets pause. We're pausing. But that's not what you would get from the financial media. It has to be, you know, the jobs report's terrible. The economy, the global economy's slowing. And it is. Does that mean you shouldn't own stocks? Are they expensive? No. Are they dear? No. They're not. They clearly are not. So as we have corporate profits that are still doing very well, thank you, better than expected, thank you. Dividends being raised, cash flows are incredible. And the number of defaults of corporations, bonds meaning, is so minimal, it's just off the charts. They're just not. There's nothing wrong. But we can't wait for the breathlessly for the different jobs reports or economic numbers. So we have, for example, jobs were just terrible. I mean, the Democrats were probably breathing a very big sigh of relief because jobs have been really good, all right? And so is that number to be believed? I don't know. I don't believe any of the numbers. It was at 300. It was over 300,000 in January. Over 225,000 in February. Were those wrong? Are they right? If we just took an average and said we're up 180,000, is that an acceptable figure, a rolling three-month type of number? Or should we jump on every single number and decide the economy is on fire or the economy is dead? That's the breathless media. It's up to us to take a step back. Just this past week also, yesterday, housing starts, which housing's been terrible, terrible, terrible. That's all you know. It's just horrible. Housing's a leading indicator of how terrible things are. Housing starts up 19%, like the highest number in, I don't know, a decade or something. Is that right? Or was last month's number of, like, negative, surprisingly? Was that one right? Or if we take a blended number and say that housing has definitely slowed down, but it is not negative, it's positive and still growing, and housing starts are always bouncing around due to weather and other patterns, or is it important that we take every number breathlessly and try to divine what the future is? Well, if you're in the financial press, that is what you do, right or wrong. So as we go through these different numbers, and you think about all the news that's coming out, I think it's, I don't know, it just seems easy to me to just take a step back. Maybe it's not for you, maybe it's a thing, right? But I think it's a thing we all have to do, really in any aspect of our life, is take a step back and actually have a reasonable 10,000-foot level look at things. If we just bounce around emotionally in all our relationships, well, I hate that person now because they kind of ticked me off. Okay. That's not going to work. But it really doesn't work in your investments either. It doesn't work at all. We have the trade numbers, the trade deficit, big news this week. You know, and it should be big news. I understand because we have to kill the president. And on top of that, it's his big thing, right? Trade deficits are the end of the world. The trade wars, that's the thing. It's really killing us, right? The amount of total trade is at the highest level it has ever been. And what do I mean by that? I mean total trade, how much we send out of the United States plus how much we take in. Total trade. Total. At the highest levels ever. Now, does that sound like a trade war to you? Because it doesn't a lot to me. It sounds like trade is great. At record levels, it sounds fantastic. And I'm not sure what trade war there is. And as we're seeing progress, we've seen a trade deal with Mexico. We've seen trade deal with Canada. We've seen Europe on hold. No more trade wars. We're going to work together to get towards zero. It was never a big problem with Europe, but might as well get to zero, guys, right? How's China going? Well, it's really bad, and it's really going to be terrible, and so on and so forth. And we probably should just let the Chinese continue to steal all technology until they were the largest country in the world and biggest superpower, and then just kind of let them take over everything, because that's what they're trying to do. But instead, the president said, enough's enough. Let's stop letting them steal technology. Now, this has to be after, you know, 40 years of just stealing things. And it's not that important that you steal movies. It's wrong, and we should do something about that. But what's really important, of course, is stealing important technology, like missile defense things, you know, stuff like that. Minor in most corners of the world, but I think pretty important to stop doing that. And so that's been a really big job. And people don't like it when you take their stuff away. Like, for example, we're going to give you money for 10 years. If you like it in the 10th year and first month, no, you don't like it. You want that money back, even if you don't deserve it. Well, why would they be mad? Because we want to have a real trade deal. Well, because they got away with it forever. We taught them that that's the way they should behave. We're not. But here's where we really are. China's agreed to reduce tariffs on literally thousands of things already. Already they have. The average tariff has been reduced by 30% in their country already. No deal yet. Already. It's moving that way, which is why trade's still going and at record levels. But is that what we read about and think about? No. Global slowdown, really bad, things are terrible, and we need to grab one or two data points and decide whether things are good or bad and not take a 10,000-foot level look at things. I don't know if the economy is slowing down. Is it slowing down? Well, maybe it is. Does that mean it's going negative? Not at all. Does it seem to you like it's going negative? The fact that wages rose 3.5% this past jobs report, and by the way, the last one too. So, you know, it is kind of starting to look like a little bit of a trend that wages are doing very well. And wages, remember, they don't include bonuses and overtime. None of that. And considering that most jobs now have some form of a bonus built in at any kind of a higher level, and certainly overtime at lower levels, that seems like a really weird measurement. But yeah, I get it. I get why they do it. We've also had in these jobs numbers, we have civilian employment at 250,000. It's another way of looking at things. It's just very mixed data. And when we go all over the place, and you think about January, it was very warm in this country. February was weirdly cold. Does any of this mean we should be deciding that no more new construction is being built because the weather is really bad? I mean, the biggest effect of this jobs report was construction jobs. Weather does impact that. So when we think about all these numbers and wonder, I again come back to this is, we just make this hard. I don't know why we make it so hard, but we do. We decide it's got to be hard to buy and hold the greatest corporations in the world. We got to know what the economy is doing. We want to check and see what the market's doing. Why? Does that help you buy and hold the great corporations in the world? To give you a good perspective of what's really happening from 10,000 feet watching all the trading numbers every day and all the data flow in. This is good. That's bad. This is good. This is bad. Now I have to divine what the market's going to do. I'm wondering if I should buy. Should I hold? What should I do? Should I sell all my stocks? I don't know. There's really that's not me, or that's not this, that's not that. It is all of us to a degree. Because maybe there's just some cash that really just ought to be allocated, but you know, you're waiting for the right time. But maybe you're looking too close to find that right time. So it sits. And either way, it's a grand waste of time. But the reality is this, for many, many, many people, and I just prefer not to tempt myself to fall into that category. You know, during the fourth quarter of last year, we had record outflows of from mutual funds and ETFs. Yeah, once again, at the bottom. Perfect. Yeah, it doesn't really affect me. It doesn't affect this human being. Just all the others. It's astounding how many people sell when prices fall. It's just absolutely, totally, 100% remarkable. Time and again. So we really have to gear ourselves and think about it before those times hit. Because we're fools. We just do it over and over again and expect different results. It's unbelievable. But we do it. We do. So it's best for us to think about it before it happens. Wow, how are we going to react? Prices fall, I'm going to be a buyer. Just things like that that can change the whole dynamic. All right, we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, I do want and need your phone calls. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And again, if you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, good morning, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That is our number. Hey, in the second hour, I want to touch on a couple of quick things here. I want to talk about the 10th anniversary of the market bottom. Yeah, that's right. Today, 10 years ago, the market closed at 676 after an intraday low of 666 on the S&P 500. More than 300% ago. That's where we are today. Unbelievable. Remarkable. Is this the best bull market ever? No, it's not, actually. Not actually at all. And how many cries we've had for it to end. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing indeed. All right, as we finish out this hour here, let's grab an email, okay? So we've got, hi, Dave, curious as to why you think the transport index is down so much. Everything still has to be shipped these days. Thanks, Joe. You're right. It does have to be shipped these days. But the reason why, if you can imagine this, and there's a lot of things, and I don't want to put anything that's and pretend that I have any specific answers that others don't. But I think when we look at things at a 10,000-foot level, if you will, are things completely falling apart in the world? No, but they are slowing. And so if you've got 80% of the trading controlled by computers, right? And traders follow the same types of rules, right? Trading rules are what we input into the computers, right? It's the algorithms that are being built by humans based on what data, right? Trade war. So if we hear anything in the news about trade war, you're going to see the computers instantly go and sell. And they're going to sell baskets of securities that the algorithm feels are most closely tied to a good outcome, which a lot of that would be transportation, by the way. But that's really not the point. What we're looking at now is global slowdown. So if we have global slowdown, what is going to slow down? Well, trade will, right? We're just economic activity slows. So goods aren't going to be shipped as much. So we have transportation issues, if you will. I think it's as much algorithms as anything else, which to me sounds a lot like a buying opportunity, not a, you know, I'm concerned or worried. Now, if I'm wrong and the world is doomed, then eventually all transportation will slow dramatically and I'll just be wrong for a while. And again, I say for a while because always and forever, everything is recovered. Prices recover, stocks recover, everything recovers and runs up to all-time highs. So, but in the short run, the question really is, do we take advantage of dips like this or do we run for the hills? So my feeling is we've had, 10 days in a row or something. That's a huge number of days that the transportation index has not done well. And I do believe that that has everything to do with traders, which again is almost always computers these days, 80% of trading is. Then if we're talking about that, why wouldn't the, and it's working. So the algorithms say sell, sell, sell. So any data point we get out of Europe that says, hey, we're concerned about, we're taking down our growth rates from 1.7 to 1.1, which of course happened, 2 days ago? In Europe, and that's a big deal. It truly is. So we have that being a big deal. I get it. I just don't think it's that big a deal. So as we look at it for the long run, Europe has been a basket case for, 20 years, 30 years? Socialism, let's keep trying it. We'll try it a different way with different politicians, but the same thing. Slows growth, isn't working. It's not an innovative country or countries. So I think that transportation, slower growth in the world is true, but I also look at this more as a buying opportunity than something we ought to be running from. So, Joe, great question, but I think it's algorithms and short-term traders just as much as anything else. global growth slowing down has been coming for quite a while. All right, stick around for hour number two upcoming right after Fox News. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And again, of course, these are my opinions only. We're not here to talk stocks about what you buy and sell and all that nonsense because, well, it is nonsense. Totally nonsense. I don't know what the market's going to do. No human being does, although many proclaim. The reality is that nobody does day to day. Here's what I do know, however. Over time, 100% of the time, 100% of the time, the market moves higher over time. About 70% of the days are up. About 70% of the weeks are up. More than that of the months. And more than that of the years. As we go out further time-wise, it's interesting because it becomes more and more certain that you will make money. Now, what possibly could somebody get into, right, that has the highest return of anything? Nothing is even close. Nothing is close. We still deal in a world of misinformation, so much misinformation. People are still out there frightening people into buying equity indexed annuities. I can talk about that all day long. I just found another one. But I digress. We sell fear. Fear. Oh, you don't want to play the roulette of the, you know, or the casino game of the stock market. Actually, I do. I'd like to be the casino all the time because the odds are so stacked in my favor that historically, 100% of the time, I can't lose. But for some reason, some people don't understand that simple concept. The stock market doesn't go to zero. An individual stock can go to zero and does. Everybody wants to go buy some pot stocks, or we want to buy air.com in 2000 or 1999. And they go poof and go away. Yeah, the stock market's rigged. No, you're greedy and foolish. Sorry that you lost all your money on a single bet. But the market didn't go away. The market's at all-time highs, as it always is, or always gets back to, after another normal certain occur over and over again, all the days of our lives, market correction. But no, we got to turn this into a casino game. Why? Because we want to scare people, because then they'll buy super high commission products and I can make a lot of money. They can't get out of them and they can't win. But who in the world wouldn't want to own something that has so high a return that nothing is even remotely close, that you have no management responsibility for? None. Absolutely none. They won't even let you come plow the sidewalk in a snowstorm. That has an income story that nobody talks about. Dividends being paid by the great corporations of the world have risen by more than 3 times the rate of inflation. It's crazy. But so, oh, what's the market going to do? What about the data? What about Trump? What about Obama? What about those socialists? Always right. And we miss the greatness of this whole thing. The average person put away $50 a month, $100 a month. What can you do that in? Nothing. But you can put a little tiny bit of money away for next to nothing, have no management responsibility, and have the highest returns on the planet. You can get rich. Everyone can. This isn't a game for the rich. It's a game for the poor to become rich. But we turn it into a constant jabber about, well, I don't know, it's just a casino game. No, it's not. The odds are in your favor, and the longer you hold, the more certain your results. How many 10-year periods have lost money? Next to none. Next to none. Less than 5% of all 10-year periods have lost money. You see, the odds are so stacked in your favor, nobody would bet against you. 70% of the days, 70% of the weeks, 70% of the years are up. Nobody would take that bet. But we do. We constantly do. Well, I'm really worried about P.E. ratios or dividend yields, or I'm worried about the economy. I just think that the next year looks really rough out there. And I say, well, you know, because, well, what do you think is going to happen to the market this year? Let me see. Okay, so the market's up 70% of the time. let me grind over this for a second. Ah, I think it'll be up. And the weird thing is I'm right almost 3 out of 4 times. Weird. My record of calling the market is way better than any economist. Because we don't overthink, we just look at it. And of course, I say that tongue in cheek because I don't know, because I don't follow any of the economists. Oh, we follow a few for their general outlooks, their general thoughts, not what they think the market's going to do, because nobody knows what the market's going to do year to year. They're always wrong. Why would I care what they think? That's really the real answer. Every December, what do you think the market's going to do next year? I don't care. It's probably going to go up. That's what it does. Well, don't you have an opinion on that? No. Why would I? I don't know how to play that game. It's stupid. So, yeah, in the past, we played games of having what sectors seem cheap or what ones seem dear. Of course, we want to talk about that. That's how you manage portfolios. You do it in a vacuum, but you also don't make weird predictions like, I think we got to get out now. Why? Look, here's what's happened. We're in our 10th. Today is literally the 10-year anniversary today of the market bottom 10 years ago. So 10 years ago today, the S&P 500 closed at 676 after touching 666. Yeah, the devil's bottom. Midday. And took off. Took off this day 10 years ago. Now, you remember how QE was phony and it's all about the Fed and corporate profits aren't really there. And then it was sales really aren't there. It was just corporate engineering, financial engineering. They were buying back stock. Nothing else really good was happening. Nothing good was happening. Nothing. Nothing. And if it wasn't for QE, as soon as it gets taken away, then we're dead. And then, well, they started to take it away. And oops, no, before that, I'm sorry. We needed to panic about what was going on in Greece, because Greece, which pretty much has the GDP the size of Vermont, is going to take down the entire world. Of course, we knew that because the geniuses told us that and decided every day we'd blanket the news and panic people. And it worked. People panicked out of the market again, missed it again. So we went through Europe part 1, 2, and 3. What are we doing now? Well, maybe part 4, yeah, or 3.5, whatever you want to call it. It's not much of a panic. We don't really have Greece melting down, but we've had to worry about Italy melting down. And aren't you still worried about that? Didn't you hear somebody talk about that? I thought I heard somebody talk about that 5 years ago and 4 years ago and 3 years ago and maybe even yesterday. That's really the big problem out there. And then we had trade wars. Oh, no. Wow, no. Sorry. We had to worry about hyperinflation first. And then, of course, we had to worry about Obama and again being reelected. Good Lord, you got to be kidding me, because he's going to kill us. He tried, but it didn't work. Why doesn't that work? Why doesn't that work? Because even crummy economic policy, even going after corporations, raising taxes, we became the highest taxed nation in the world on corporations. Our jobs literally were disappearing. We forget about that. But it really is true. We've had hundreds of thousands, millions of jobs over the past couple of decades have gone overseas. And accelerating in recent years, as we say, we don't want you here. Because how much more loudly could you say we don't want you here than to tax and regulate until they need to leave? So they did, in droves. It's a problem. We then had to deal with, and so jobs growth is really slow. The economy's barely breathing. But the market keeps growing. Corporations are adjusting, but it's all phony, right? Isn't that what? So how, why would you invest in something phony like corporate profits, cash flows, and dividend yields? People didn't. Trillions sat on the sidelines. And here we are today through trade wars, and yes, a freak show called Donald Trump, elected to president of the United States. Socialists clamoring. It's weird, and hatred huge. Talking about impeachment over what? A non-event, something that literally didn't happen. So we got to find something else. That's where we're at now. And the market's up over 300%. What is wrong with us? What is wrong with us that we just let the daily flow of data, it's not even news, because it's just barf data, just spewed all over everybody. It doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be have any context. We just barf it. And we barf it with such anger and frustration that we get to understand, oh my gosh, this is, could be a terrible thing. Greece could take down the world. Nobody stops. Nobody knows. Nobody understands any of it. Strong dollar, weak dollar, all those things. Nobody understands, but if we hear it breathlessly, we know it's bad news. If we hear it happy, then we know it's good news. We don't understand what they just said, but we need to react based on people's emotions. People that read the news, that's what we should base it on, their emotion. It becomes my emotion, so I don't really know what's going on, but that's how I'm going to invest. 10 years later, over 300%. And of course, everybody's learned those lessons as we went into the fourth quarter last year. You know, they don't sell out. And again, sell out at the bottom, part 23. What should I do different? How about write a check? How about buy when prices give you a break? Oh, I don't know. I meant, you know, should we be selling out? No. We've got to learn from these things. And I'm not just sitting here making fun. I don't understand. I just don't understand. I don't understand how something so simple. Your whole life, you're 80 years old. Your deceased parents, grandparents, that would be 140 years old today. Market's up 10%. And they went through a whole lot more worse stuff, including world wars and depressions. But, I've got to be worried. I want to put my money in some kind of fixed product that I can't win. It's a liar product. Instead of just, like, learning. Understanding. This is not hard. It's simple. It's just emotionally hard for us to hang on. In the last 10 years, there's example after example after example, year after year after year of that. But we still argue over whether the Federal Reserve has too big a balance sheet. I wonder what inflation's going to be. I wonder what the Fed's going to do if the economy grows and then they raise interest rates again. Oh, my. And what about the trading last week? It's incredible. Instead of just saying, what is the easiest way to get rich? Monthly, start off. You can only afford $50 a month. Cool. Put 50 in. Then go to 60. Then go to 75. Go to 100 someday. Up to 200 someday. And guess what? $150 a month for 40 years is $1.24 million in the S&P 500. Not the best mutual fund, not the best investment. No, it isn't Google. It's nothing. It's the whole thing, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the whole market. $150 a month. Yeah, I don't know. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. Great, just follow that mantra. It's easier to live that way and feel like a victim than to do something about it, than to know what the facts are. I don't know what I'm going to do when the market falls. Why? It falls from time to time, then runs to all-time highs. We don't want to be victims anymore. We don't want to be emotional kids. This is easy. In the last 10 years of this great, amazing market that just ignores idiotic politicians, angry political noise, hate, deficits that almost ruined Europe, slow growth rates around the world, trade wars, stupid government policies. Unbelievable. Yeah, I know. Wall Street caused this. Yeah, I know. I know. That's what everybody wants you to believe, and they had nothing. Almost nothing. All they did was react to what the politicians told them they had to do. You have to sell subprime loans. We know they won't pay back, but if you don't, we take all the money away. Okay, we'll do that then. And Fannie and Freddie went, okay, and we'll put a triple A on it, okay, so you don't lose money. And so we do terrible lending, aggressive lending. Nobody looks for the lending standards or liar loans or anything like that. But it really wasn't the politician's fault. I get it. But when we unwind this and we begin to understand it, you understand why we recovered so well. 300% gains. Can't we learn? We need to learn from that. It's not making fun of people. It's saying, hey, quit playing a guessing game with this. Quit letting people scare you. Understand the agenda of fear. The agenda of fear is to separate you from your money because it's cheap, easy for you to invest in the greatest investment there is. But when you start slapping guarantees on it and paying people 10% commissions, what you do with the fear products, how do you think that's going to end well? It doesn't end well. It certainly doesn't end with you making any money. Oh, but it's all guaranteed, and that just that puts me in my little happy place. I get it. Who doesn't want to be in their happy place? I like my happy place, too. But we just got to grow up about this stuff. Life has bumps. Investments have bumps. Just ride them out. And if you don't, you can't win. There is not a magic thing out there that gets you anywhere near 10% without bumps. Let's just get over it and grow up and use the last 10 years to learn from it. Not be afraid of it. It's noisy out there. That's why we talk about this. It's noisy. It's hard to have perspective. Let's all float up together to 10,000 feet. Take a look. This beautiful world, this abundant world, this amazing world, where the average person has more and more and more. And everyone, certainly in the United States, has every opportunity in the world to become rich. What is rich? Is it because then I'm a billionaire? Or I'm the biggest billionaire? Or is it financial independence? Because maybe you won't be a billionaire. Or is it really just contentment that is our issue? I don't know. I do know this. The market's easy. Let's not make it hard. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, please do join us on the phone. We're going to grab Paul here, but we have a full board, an empty board otherwise, at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So please do give us a call. And, Paul, thank you for waiting for my monologue. Go ahead, please.
And it was a marvelous monologue, too, Dave, so don't worry about that.
Well, thank you.
Listen, since you have people – your people know people behind the scenes. I'd like to know what is going on with the nuclear industry here in the state of Idaho. Many, many years ago, back in 1951, commercial nuclear power was first started here in the state of Idaho. And ARCO became the first city in the entire world to be lit by nuclear power. And over the years, that has become a multi-billion dollar commercial power industry. That it's now raised the standard of living of over a billion people around the world in over 30 different countries. Mm-hmm. And all these years later, there isn't a single light bulb being lit by nuclear power here in the state of Idaho. And there isn't a single penny of the commercial power industry coming into the coffers of the state of Idaho. Right. What happened here, Dave? You've been talking a lot this morning about people making dumb decisions. It appears to me here that somebody has made some dumb decisions.
That's a really great point. It really is. There's a couple things. I think that's a really good question for us to ask of our Congressman Simpson, who's really up. I did an interview with him probably about a year and a half ago, and he's so up on what's going on at INEL. He would be much better at this. But one of the things that you brought up really strikes me as true about our government, and I think that we have blown it as government, not just Idaho, but I mean federal government. This was a federal project, not Idaho project. So federal government giving away all of their know-how, whether it was from the space program, from this, throwing $400 million at Elon Musk. You know, this is corporate welfare. And we as taxpayers, as the government, owners of the government, have gotten nothing back for these things. And so I do think that there's a bit of a structuring problem with how the government does invent and create things. Not very much anymore, but certainly in the past they have. And when they do at one of their amazing labs, other than using it for defense, if it goes out to industry, then they should be receiving some annuities from patents, right?
Right.
And we don't. And so I would hope that would change at some point in time. It has not yet, but I don't disagree with you. There's a nuclear. The reason Idaho doesn't, of course, is because power is so cheap. Why put up a nuclear factory here when we have hydropower? It does make sense. And for them to continue to go that direction until we need more or if there's no other alternatives, because the nuclear plants are so incredibly expensive to build. But your point is very valid. We, as taxpayers, got nothing from an incredible creation called nuclear power, although a billion people in the world or more than that probably are using some power from that. So, great point, and I think it brings up a bigger bunch of points, which is why don't we get some benefit as taxpayers for the billions or trillions that the government does spend in R&D when it actually works out?
Yeah. Well, Dave, there is one element that the leadership of the state of Idaho seems bound and determined to shut down the Idaho National Laboratory, which is a perfect place in the world for us to consolidate this commercial spent fuel, and it's going to be totally safe. There is nothing about a solid uranium pellet inside of a ceramic pellet inside a steel tube that's going to leak out into the aquifer. And we could, tap into the several billions of dollars worth of funding that's available in the Nuclear Waste Act to allow states to participate in developing an interim storage program until the federal government gets around to solving the ultimate, making the ultimate decision as to how they're going to resolve the processing or burial of nuclear materials.
Well, you know how many billions they've spent already in Nevada. It's a political football. It really is. It's very difficult, and I think storing it here means we would store it forever because nobody wants it in their own backyard. I'm not saying it's a wrong decision. I'm not saying you're not 100% correct about there being zero chance. I really don't know why we don't do what you just said and then blast it out into outer space, but we don't, or send it towards the sun so it gets sucked into the sun. I don't know, but we don't. And these are questions, better questions for smarter people about it than I. But what I'm saying is that everybody says fine, but not in my backyard, including the middle of Nevada, which we've all driven through and know there's nothing there. And there's not even people there, so it's not an issue, but it is an issue when it's in your backyard.
Well, thanks for your input, Dave.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your call, and I agree. It's not necessarily a big problem, but it is something that everybody is concerned about because any kind of accident is obviously a big deal in your own backyard. Paul, thank you for holding. I appreciate it, and you have a great weekend.
And the same, Dave.
Thanks. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We are on the 10th anniversary of this amazing bull market. Is it the best ever? Not even close. It's the longest, but it's not the biggest recovery at all. In fact, it's in third place. But we'll talk more about it. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. 580-KIDO. We'll be right back after Fox News. Hello, welcome. Welcome, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Of course, our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. All right. You know, it is, like I said, the 10th anniversary of the market rally. And as I've been talking about here, these are just incredibly important lessons for us to learn. As if we don't, we just, they just go by, and we have to be taught again, because life has a way of teaching you either through watching others' mistakes or making them painfully ourselves. We will learn. We will learn. Hopefully before we're dead, we learn, or too late. But buying and selling and trying to make this some kind of a game, or being panicked out over everything, or thinking of the great corporations of the world as a casino that needs to be traded or what have you, is wrong. And it really throws us off, and it leads us into amazingly bad products. I have always said I would be happy to look at an equity indexed annuity, something that guaranteed the downside of markets when they reduced the commissions or eliminated them. And I saw one the other day, and it's the same silly problem that I just don't think we spend enough time on talking about. So don't worry, I'm not going to go into this big old dissertation about it, but I've got it sitting in front of me, and I thought, well, one of these days I've got to talk about what does it look like instead of paying a 10% upfront commission, what does it look like to have no commission in an equity index annuity? Because I've got one in front of me. It's for registered investment advisors like us if we want to use this product. And I'll tell you what, I mean, it is not bad. Not bad at all. For you can get out in 5 years instead of 10 or 15. That's not bad. The annual caps are much higher. You can expect to do better than 3%, which is all you would ever get in a normal one. They don't tell you that, but I'm just telling you the mathematics. I'm not going into a long dissertation on this today. You could get 6. Much better. With no downside. But you're capped. So realistically, would you get 6? No, you get somewhere around 4. But you can get out in 5 years. But can you get 6? In the fine, fine print, as I look, I go, is this guaranteed, this cap? What is this cap? Is this like the first year, or do I have it for all 5 years? Yep, that's what I thought. It's for 1 year, just like all of them. They reset it every year, every year. And as you well know, the greatest legal criminals in the world are with insurance companies. When have you ever got an illustration from an insurance company? Right? Where it said our dividends are going to be this or that, or we're going to pay this much interest or that, and they do. I mean, whenever have they lived up to your expectation? Ever. When interest rates fall, if markets become more volatile, what do you think is going to happen to that cap rate? By the way, it's guaranteed to be. Are you ready? Boy, I'm telling you, they're stepping out on a gangplank now. Boy, I hope the sea isn't rocky, because they could really lose their shirt, this company, huh? 1.25. 1.25. Literally, 12 months from now, you can be at 1.25. In other words, you can't make more than that. If the market goes up 20, you get 1.25. Oh, well, but that's only if. Yeah, but you got to understand, I've been doing this for almost 40 years now, for crying out. I can't believe it, but almost 40 years. And I have never once seen an insurance company live up to their promise. Not once. Not once. If they're paying 10% now, they won't when it renews. If their dividend scale on that whole life policy is X, it will be Y or Z or worse. 100% of the time. Do I really believe that this cap will hold? If you believe that, I've got a bridge to sell you. They never do. I want to know what they guarantee, not what they tell me for 12 months I can do. And this is a no commission deal. The only way, if you really can't stand the volatility, the only way is through a structured note. You can even have FDIC insurance, because then you do get 100% of the upside, and I mean 100%, no cap. I mean it, no cap. No cap. I don't think you should do that because you give up the dividends just like you do in these products. But that's all. You just give up the dividend. At least you have no cap. And you have FDIC insurance. Not the full faith and credit of some insurance company that may or may not be there tomorrow. If you want that credit, they'll pay you even more. You can even get an upside percentage when volatility is reasonable. And you pick your duration. Look, I'm not trying to sell the product. I don't believe in the product. I think you ought to keep your dividend. Put up with the volatility, as we've discussed. But if you can't, don't buy this garbage. Because that's what it is. It's unadulterated garbage. It ought to be illegal. It's not. It's not. It ought to have better disclosures. It doesn't. I'm not king of the world. I can't make them go away. Just don't do them. Don't fall for it. These guys are so good at what they do, which is to pimp horrible products and make them sound great. Don't let them do it to you or anyone you love, even people you don't love. Stop them. Stop buying this stuff. But anyway, I wanted to share that with you. It's just astounding. I thought, wow, maybe someday they'll have really low commissions. It might work out. They can put guarantees. Nope. 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 It's still CRAP. That's what it is. Unadulterated, horrible products. All right. I got to go take a break here. Give us a call. Our final segment upcoming, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back. Good morning. Happy Saturday, everybody. Happy 10th anniversary to this amazing bull market. By the way, I said earlier that it was not the greatest bull market ever. It is the longest bull market ever. But it certainly isn't the biggest price increase. Those two occurred in the 1990s and actually post-depression in the late 30s. So those two were just rocket ships that took off and kept going. Although, you know, I would argue that this one was barely there, and we touched on it. We're down 19.8%. Well, technically, you have to be down 20, and you have to do it at the close, even though intraday we hit it. It has had a couple of close calls. Does it matter? No, not at all. Does it really matter if you're down 22% or down 19.8%? Hardly. It's just something to talk about and babble about and then sit around and have the experts tell you it's long in the tooth. Right? Or the next shoe to drop is going to be commercial real estate. These are the kinds of things that people dealt with, we all dealt with, the last several years. We all had to deal with it. Absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. Had to deal with it. And it scared people, scared people, scared people. Everybody's trying to make a big call. And remember, when people are bearish, they sound smart. Bullish people don't. Don't sound smart at all when you're a bull. All All right, let's go to George in Boise. He wants to talk about Apple before we're done. I can get off my last rant. George, thanks for bailing me out. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing this morning?
I'm well. George, you haven't called in forever.
Yeah, I had a bunch of operations, and but I'm back on my feet and working okay, so.
Good. Well, it's good to hear your voice. I was afraid something happened to you, so good for you.
It did.
Yeah, apparently it did. I'm sorry about that, but I'm glad you're up and going.
Yeah, okay. I want to talk about Apple. It just took such a huge hit and was down, but not really that bad. It didn't seem to me. And you said for a long time, that these tech companies have got to keep reinventing themselves, and iPhone mm-hmm. sales are down and whatever else they say. But it seems to me that Apple is recognizing that and is moving into other stuff. That their services business, it's not up, but it seems to be growing. And they, from what I've heard and read, in the future, it's going to be significant higher. The Tim Cook doesn't seem to be worried too much about it, and he said that they were determined to keep increasing their dividend. So some people have said that it looks like it's a value stock right now, and I was just wondering. It looks good to me. It's not good right now, but it's kind of stable. Mm-hmm. But it looks to me like in the future it's going to be good again, and it's one of the major holdings in my portfolio. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, George, full disclosure, it's my second biggest holding, so mm-hmm. I like it. I like it a lot, and I've just continued to hold it. The only stock I've trimmed of it was because it just simply got out of hand, and I had to sell a little bit to get it more right-sized. And, of course, I wish I had every share that I did have, because it's a pretty low basis. We all know how good it's gone. So I do think the stock is great. I think the company is great. And it depends on how you think about it. I think there's also value here that is not talked about at all. And I'm not to say that I have some unique valuation perspective, but I think that the fact that other tech companies steal your data and sell it is a big deal to me, and I don't think I'm alone. Apple does not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Apple's made a very big deal of having a closed enterprise,
right,
meaning your data is not available to the, quote, developers of apps. Your data is not available to anyone at any price. And I think that's very valuable to me. It's very valuable to lots of people. I don't like the idea that I can say, not Siri, but what is that? Alexa, I want some more toilet paper. I love that idea. But the idea that I'm sitting around a room and saying, let's see what Alexa puts on my advertising here. I know, I don't jet ski. How about I just talk about jet skis for a couple of days? Bam. Guess what is advertised at you? They're listening to you. I find that offensive. And they lie about it. I find that offensive, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Apple has additional value in its privacy concerns, and they're not selling data. So I think that these are the kinds of things they are doing. I think their reach into healthcare, George, is phenomenal. I just can't imagine what it's going to be like for people to live or to get old in place, living at home in place where you have monitors called iWatches. Mm-hmm. on you, that to monitor your heartbeat, your blood sugar, your insulin, all those things that we don't think about and will be upon us and are upon us now. And we just, Moore's Law is dead. Moore's Law that it takes 18 months to shrink technology in double speeds that's way so yesterday. We're on to things happening at lightning speed. It's just getting faster and the change is more quickly. I think we're going to be allowing people to stay in place, and we'll know the ambulance will be sent when grandma falls.
Yeah.
And when grandma has a heart attack or an indication of a heart attack, it will be on the way. So I think that these are amazing things that Apple is diving into. And you're right, the services business is just not even – I think the services business would be a Fortune 50 company all by itself.
Right.
It's amazing. So it's something that they don't talk about. But if you're a trader, if you're Wall Street, if you're an analyst, you have to sit around and babble about iPhone sales. So that's what they do.
Well,
it's an opportunity is the way I see it, George.
Yeah, as long as they keep putting those dividends into my cash account, that's okay with me. Because like I said, somebody, what do you think about this idea of it being a value stock?
I agree. It has been for quite some time. When you remove the cash, and I don't know what they're going to do with their cash hoarded sometime, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Apple all over your car. Maybe they don't build them, but they're all over entertaining us in your car. I don't know. I don't know where they're going to spend all that money, but they can. If they decide that they've got enough technology or somebody else does and they want to go build cars, they've got enough cash to go make that happen. Uh-huh. So in addition to buying back stock, but the idea right now, net of cash, that you're selling at around 10 to 12 times earnings is absurd.
Yeah.
It is just an absurdly low valuation. So, yes, I think it's a value stock.
Well, I've had it for a while.
And you get paid a dividend, as you pointed out. You get paid to wait.
Yeah, I think I'm going to keep it. So anyway, well, I hope you enjoy your time with your grandchildren.
Thank you, sir.
Over there. One of my daughters is in that area.
Oh, good. Yes, yes. Well,
and,
I'm sorry for her,
too. And she loves the clouds and the rain.
I don't understand it either. It's flat cold here. It really is. It's cold. It's cold.
Really? That humid, wet cold.
That wet air just kills you.
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah, I lived in Vancouver for 4 years. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Summers are beautiful. I'll give them that.
You bet. Okay, Dave.
All right. George, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. You have a great weekend. Thank you.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, we're just about out of here. Listen, thank you so much for joining us today. If you have any comments or questions during the week, please shoot those over at petsofinancial.com. We also have calculators and articles and podcasts for you to catch up and help you on your financial planning. Thanks again to the callers and emailers. I appreciate you participating, and everybody have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.